Ever wonder if there's more to the movies you love? Do you like to ponder how they got from A to Z? Who chose the plot twists? Why use those characters? Is there a deeper meaning? We're here to explore those questions and maybe learn a bit along the way. VGB Studios proudly presents The Filmlosophers.
Hello and welcome to another exciting episode of The Filmlosophers, the show that gets into the movies you love and digs a little deeper. I am your host, Eddie Villanueva, and alongside me, as always, is Spencer Soul number 4, Williams.
Wow. Okay, I see we are just not even trying this week.
You know what? I've opted this year to try to be somewhat nice, but you're really putting me off of my... You know, don't give me that look. I don't have to tell you all of my resolutions.
Because if I'm coming at you at 100%...
Well, it's gone. It's in the garbage. 50. See ya. See, bye. Exactly, and speaking of resolutions...
Excuses.
Oh, yeah? Yeah?
This is how we're starting off 21.
With us, we have for the very first time the guy who snores, the other fella in the room, my brother, Ben. He is here to join us in this conversation.
Yeah.
Hi. Good evening. Yeah, it's good to be here today.
Very natural. Yes. Not stiff in the slightest. Good job.
He had to adjust his tie there. We got a great show in store as we're going to be talking about the recently released Pixar film Soul. I know it's a little bit later, but we want to kind of start the new year off with a good, you know, review.
Yeah.
So we're excited.
That's why we did Wonder Woman last week.
So before we get into any more of that, Spencer, give them opening credits.
Tune in each and every Wednesday morning on all your favorite streaming platforms and over on our website at filmlosophers.com. Also, connect with us on the social pages at facebook.com/filmlosophers and on Twitter and Instagram at filmlosophy101.
That's right. We are in a new season. This is the very start of season 5. So it's really exciting. Season 5, so you got 4 seasons of previous episodes on our website. Check them out, filmlosophers.com. We got over 240 episodes there, as well as on our Facebook page and our Instagram and Twitter page. You can follow all of us there as well. We like to talk sometimes. Don't look at me like that. That's another resolution that I'm working on. But speaking of good resolutions, we, like I said, wanted to start this year off right. And we kind of wanted to hit the nail with a really good spot with a good review. And of course, if you've been living under a rock or whatever, you may not have been aware of the most recent drop from Pixar, which was Soul.
Yep. I didn't realize your presence. Okay.
This movie was such a great installation into the Pixar universe, if you will, and we're excited to talk about it. So before we dive into it, because I know we're going to gush, Spencer, why don't you go ahead and give them opening credit, or the official synopsis, goodness. I swear we're going to get it right. Go ahead.
Okay. Joe Gardner, a middle school band teacher, gets the chance of a lifetime to play at the best jazz club in town. But one small misstep takes him from the streets of New York City to the great before, a fantastical place where new souls get their personalities, quirks, and interests before they go to Earth. Determined to return to his life, Joe teams up with the precocious soul, 22, who has never understood the appeal of the human experience. As Joe desperately tries to show 22 what's great about living, he may just discover the answers to some of life's most important questions.
That's right. Directed by Pete Docter, the Pete Docter, legend over at Pixar, and co-directed by Kemp Powers. The film stars the voices of Jamie Foxx, Tina Fey, Graham Norton, Rachel House, Alice Braga, Richard Ayoade. I know.
It's hard.
He's got a very interesting last name. Felicia Rashad, Donnell Rawlings, Questlove, and Angela Bassett. As I said, this is a very unique and wonderful film coming out of Pixar, as there's a lot of things that are going on in this movie that really kind of transcend what they've done previously. So it's really interesting that we're going to get a chance to dive into that. But I'm going to have to adjust the music here. Oh, my God, my ears are going all over the place. You know what? It is the first episode of our new year, and with everything going on from the past year in 2020, this is a great opportunity to kind of start off new, and what better foot than to have a really positive review? Because let's just be honest, there weren't that many good movies last year.
Yes.
Well, the fact that one of the biggest ones that everybody was looking forward to turned out to be the substantial flop of DC.
Yeah, I'm still sad about that.
Which, by the way, if you want to check out that episode, that is the episode before this, Lesson 247, I believe. Yeah, 247. Go with that. where we talk about Wonder Woman with intern Amy. A couple of little key notes about the film. Pixar actually chose to portray the film's main character as a musician because they wanted a, quote, profession the audience could root for, and settled for a musician after trying for a scientist, which, quote, didn't feel so naturally pure as a musician's life.
What the heck does that even mean?
Well,
scientists are dirty?
Well, I mean, considering... I don't know. Sheesh. You're really taking this to heart. I'm not the one who totes these lines for whatever character development. I don't know if you've ever heard, but Pixar has this massive like scope, this plan that they follow whenever they want to create characters or whenever they want to create films for their, you know, their franchise, for their company. Mm-hmm. And I'm pretty sure months and months of research went into this, and it kind of fits the bill. Because if you look at previous, I mean, they're coming off the heels of Coco. They have music in a lot of their films, so yeah. Musician kind of fits that kind of form.
I guess it is harder to just have science like turned into a musical of sorts.
Yeah, like I created a monster. Like I don't know. Pete Docter describes Soul as, quote, an exploration of where should your focus be. What are the things that at the end of the day are really going to be the important things that you look back on and go, I spent a worthy amount of my limited time on Earth worrying or focused on that? Which is interesting because it really does show a lot of the effort that Pete Docter and his creative team kind of took into researching, or not so much researching, but contemplating. Because, I mean, there's not much research into the afterlife you can do. Unless you're one of those people that, like, you know, oh, I crossed over and I came back, and, you know,
all right, John Edwards, we don't really need that kind of nonsense around here.
Another little thing, a little tidbit, fun clue about the film: a Dorothea Williams record previously appeared in Onward during the scene where Colt Bronco visits the Lightfoot house at the beginning of the film. So that's a little bit of an Easter egg where, if you ever are privy to what's going on in the Pixar verse, each film holds a key or some type of clue or Easter egg for the film to come, for the next film to come after that. So, which in this one, there was a marquee, or not a marquee, but like a poster of a scene from one of the films that they're going to be coming out soon after this. Nice. So I didn't want to get into box office numbers because I really, right now, it's so inaccurate to really, like, what are we going to do? Get Apple to let us know, like, oh, how many people subscribe because of this?
Apple is not going to tell you anything.
So just a little bit of inside information just before we decided to record. Spencer over here decided to have a full-on technological meltdown. If you're keeping track at, you know, home, folks, that's two already that he's had prior to one of our shows. But before I go into any further, like I said, my brother Ben is on the show, and my brother, he's got kids. He's also a fan of movies himself. But what would you say are some of the movies that you kind of reference as part of the impact for your life?
Oh man,
that's really complicated question.
Yeah, hey. That can range from anything, because it's from martial art movies to action movies to some small drama movies. It's like you can't really just pick one genre or one.
Well, I didn't say one genre. I just said some movies.
Yeah, just like give us a few. What are some top five?
What are some? That's a great question. What are your like top five? Yeah. Favorite films.
Well,
we can judge you on them.
Well, we just recently watched Interstellar, and I hadn't seen that before. And I'm a big Matthew McConaughey fan, so yeah, my top one before that was like Sahara or Fool's Gold and everything. But nah, this one takes a cake. This one was a really good movie, and looking forward to watching it again. You know, and as for me, because I do martial arts in the background, you know, Bruce Lee movies were a big impact to me because that's what got me started. Aside from that, and then, you know, watching Jackie Chan, Jet Li, and all these other movies coming out, you know, it's really good, you know, but.
So I heard one movie in there.
Yeah. True, that was only a list of one, well, but you did mention actors.
If we want to talk about impactful actors,
that's fine. Well, that's the thing, though. It's like I can't just pick a movie because then I feel like it's not
the
just
other
that.
Movies in the series.
Yeah, it's like the top five movies. Okay, Interstellar would be the top five. After that, what? The one with Jet Li. And then right after that is Jackie Chan's movie called The Drunken Boxer, which was before Drunken Master, which is when he first learned how to do drunken boxing, which shows actually there's different styles within that one style. And that's what got me towards martial arts, because living in Texas, you grow up, you know, it's like, all right, cool. And then you come back to California.
Dude,
and
you don't
different.
Have to tell people our life story.
So I'm telling you, so you understand it.
People are going to use this knowledge against us. Great.
We know he's from Texas.
Right.
How could we bring this man down in his podcast?
His weakness is rattlesnakes.
It's like literally everyone's weakness.
He loves them. and mind you, yes, those are all great films. Those are your films. Those are the ones that are that have impacted you. One of the things that I kind of want to bring to the forefront is the fact that when it comes to animated films or films coming out from Pixar, films coming out from Disney, I think it's safe to say everybody here has a soft spot for those films. I mean, because of the fact that, you know what, they've been around since we were younger. And I don't feel as old when I say that, so it's okay, I think. I don't know. Every time I open my mouth and I say something about our age, you get more gray hair. I don't know. You get upset.
Dare you? Don't get upset at that comment. Damn. 21, off to a nice, friendly start,
exactly.
I see.
Exactly. But so with this particular movie, Soul had been one of those movies where we had been aware of it for some time. We knew it was planning to come out. We saw the trailer, what, last year? Or not last year, 2020, but the year before, 2019, mm-hmm. towards the tail end. It was supposed to be released in theaters. Obviously, you know, the world flipped upside down and we had the whole COVID-19 outbreak and everything that happened therein, from government shutdowns and, you know, quarantine all the way to like businesses, small and big, collapsing. And, you know, so this movie kind of moved its way around from whether or not if it was going to be on streaming to whether if it was going to go into the theaters, whether if the, you know, if the world was going to kind of ease up and it was going to go back into the theaters before Thanksgiving. And then I guess they just finally landed on releasing it on Christmas Day, which if you were brave enough to do it, you probably stayed up until Christmas, you know, midnight and watched it. But this is one of those movies where it's not so as like the same as previous Pixar films. I mean, you have films like Monsters, Inc. that, you know, explores the things that go bump in the night in, you know, in your closet, to toys and the secret life of toys, to, you know, things. There's a huge swath, if you will. There's a huge range of different films. Mm-hmm. This is one of the few films where it takes the premise of what happens beyond the plateau of the living, which it's kind of interesting because you kind of would almost consider it, you know, taboo for any film that's geared for kids to touch on either the death of things or, you know, the grand question of where do we go after death.
That's true. And I feel like that's also why, like, the part where he dies in the movie is also like one of like a goofy montage of him almost dying. So trying to keep things light, like right before it's like, ah, he's dead.
Well, that reminds us of when we were watching cartoons when we were younger, and you see the cartoon, the character drop,
yeah,
fall through something, and all of a sudden you see an angel come out, you know, signifying something bad happened, but they won't show you it,
yeah,
per se. You know?
Yeah, it's just like that, actually.
And one of those, and that brings up a really good point, because typically with other cartoons, when it's a more slapstick type thing, whether if it's Tom and Jerry or Looney Tunes or whatever it may be, you know, you see the character like transition over and you see the aftermath of it in terms of their celestial body. But where they go from there is the bigger question. I mean, because then you begin to pose questions of faith, and you pose questions of the existence of whether or not there is something within people like a soul or a spirit. And then you begin to create this conversation where, let's be honest, typically people don't really feel comfortable going because not everybody shares that same sentiment.
Right.
You know? So that's one of the brave things that I kind of want to mention about this film. This film decides to take that conversation and manipulate it enough. And I say manipulate in a very positive way, but because it takes some work, it manipulates that whole theme and has to pose it into a way where it's okay for kids to ponder on things. Cause like one of the biggest things that I think about previous to this movie, so talking about expectations, One of my biggest expectations for this movie was finding a way to see how that conversation is created in a safe space for kids. Because you look at everybody, let's just take a look at our city, the city of Sacramento, where we're at. Mm-hmm. In Sacramento alone, you have tons, hundreds of different beliefs and different ideas and different sentiments and different, and just everything is different in terms of what people, how people view the afterlife or if lack thereof. And this is one of those places where you have the largest company geared for kids willing to, I guess, put their whole thing on the line and create a film based on that conversation. So, because if I'm looking at expectations, my biggest expectation was, how are they going to answer the question of what happens after you die? Plain and simple. Because nobody's done that yet. I mean, you have films that are more adherent to people's faith, per se. For instance, let's look at the great work that happened when Coco was created, The film Coco. That was adherent to the faith of Catholicism and the belief of the Latin culture. Like, that makes more sense. You know, you have people who believe in like creating ofrendas, and people will come back from the dead spiritually and visit with you on, you know, October 31st or November 1st, however you celebrate. And so that's the exploration of life after death in some manner. But this film takes a much broader stroke on that and looks at it from just the perspective of someone, not some Hispanic or Latin child or some, you know, Viking-esque type person who goes to Valhalla or, you know, but just oddly enough, any old Joe, so to speak. No pun intended.
Sure.
But it's... But I don't know. What about you, Spence? What were some of your expectations for the movie before actually watching it?
I had surprisingly few.
Really?
Because, I don't know, I feel like Curtis like, oh yeah, guy dies and has to do shenanigans somewhere. Like,
guy dies and has to do shenanigans. Is that really what
come
you...
Come on, from the trailer? That was kind of the
shenanigans.
Basic trailer.
Okay.
Yeah, the only thing I truly remember from the trailer before seeing the movie was 22 doing a dance near the end of it. And I remember thinking, I don't want to see this in the movie at all because I feel like it's going to just be irritating.
Mm.
Although, now that I've seen the movie...
Hold your thoughts for after the movie. We're just talking about...
I'm not going to mention it. I was just going to say it's the perfect introduction for 22.
So, Ben, what about you? What were some of your expectations? Had you actually seen any of the trailers for this movie prior?
I have not. I was going in blind. I didn't know what to expect. Didn't really have an idea of the story, what's going to happen.
You didn't show them anything?
I was supposed to do anything?
Did you ask him if he even knew what it was?
No. I thought he did.
No.
Oh, wow.
Wow.
Learning experience. Wow.
Because I'm
on
YouTube all day and I'm just watching movies, previews all day long.
Wow.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay, but like I told you a few days in advance, so you could have looked it up
okay.
if you wanted to.
No. Oh my gosh.
No.
Did you guys have a planned date for this or something? You're like, okay, we're going to do this in a couple days.
Yeah, that was kind of the vibe around here, yeah.
Okay.
Well, he told me, he's like, oh, I'm going to watch Soul. So, yeah. I'm like, oh, okay.
He's like, you can stay if you want. It doesn't matter.
Basically. So I was like, all right.
It's like, I don't care. Whatever. It. I don't care.
But yeah, the movie was better than I thought it was going to be, to be honest. I thought it was going to be almost along the same lines as Coco, but it wasn't at the same time. Because like you said, it had a different outlook on it of what was going to happen. So I ended up liking it. It was a good movie to me.
Spence, what were you going to say about, you know, after you saw the film? It was a good... you said it was a good introduction for 22.
Yeah.
So what were your first thoughts after the film was done?
I really liked it.
So simple.
Yeah.
Wow. All right, 21 minutes. Thanks, folks. That's it. What about it? Like, what were your first impressions of the film? Like, okay, do you need... let me go ahead and go first. Hold on, I'll go first. That'll help you. Okay, here. You can stand on my shoulders. The first impression that I had of the film as soon as it was done was, this was different than I expected it to be. There was at some point in time in this movie where I thought death was going to be the ultimate end for this character. Like, the passing on, like, I did, because it's Disney, so you expect, you know, oh, someone's gonna get out of something, you know, and that's it, you know, no one stays down. I mean, you look at Coco, oh, Coco was gonna make it home, everybody knew that. I mean, everybody, everything from the beginning of any Pixar film all the way through, someone who is close to death that is a good character is gonna make it. But this is the first time in the whole sense of things where I actually thought the character was going to pass on. And it was interesting because I've never really experienced a Disney character that was meant to be the focus point of the entire Pixar film to actually be gone at the end of the film, you know, like to actually die fully. And mind you, this is a little heavy, but it's still this is the premise of the film in terms of recognizing and being okay with talking about it. And ultimately, I really liked the way this film handled all of the discussions, everything from, you know, what kind of things, like explaining things like when you get in the zone of doing something, or explaining like what meditation does look like for some people and not for others. It answers all these questions that, honestly, if I were a teacher, I would feel incredibly pumped to be able to have these kind of conversations with the kids in class. Another big impression that I had, I honestly, just kind of like you, I honestly thought I was not going to like Tina Fey's 22. I really thought I was going to like loathe her whole character in this, but thankfully it completely turned around in the movie. Like within the first third of her portion being in there, it immediately changed up, and I'm like, oh, okay, I can get behind this. I can rock with this. But overall, I loved everything about this movie, including the representation of how music was played in this movie. Like, we saw a snippet of it, if you will, in Coco, when they actually recorded the... So I don't know if you know, but that scene in the beginning of Coco where he's following along with the VHS tape of Ernesto de la Cruz and all that.
Mm-hmm.
And you know that... Do you know that they actually recorded a guitarist's fingers as he was playing, and then use that as reference for when Miguel is playing? That's why when you see the up close of his fingers, it actually looks like he's legitimately playing. They went like all the way to the wall with this film. I feel like this movie absolutely blew any expectation of like worrying about, oh, well, I wonder if this is going to look real, or I wonder if, you know, if their playing is going to look whatever, or if it's just them kind of moving about and dancing or whatever with their instruments and moving so fast you don't see where they're, like, you see their finger placements. You see everything that they're doing. You see all the effort that they are putting into to make sure that the realism of this particular instrument being played looks legitimate, you know? What do you think?
That's a really interesting point, because actually I feel like after they did Coco, I have just become so comfortable with the idea of Pixar showing musicians that I didn't even think about that in the slightest. Because I was just like, they're going to get it right. I would have noticed if it looked off, because like, I'm not like a pianist or anything, but like I do know how to do like basic piano chords. So I would know if that looks off, plus I did play sax too, and I know if that looked off too. But like, oh my God, now that you brought out the music, I love the music from this movie. It was really
great. I brought it up as my very last point because I figured it was going, if nothing was going to jumpstart anything in your mind, at least the music would have. So you're welcome.
Yeah, that the like all of the jazz music in this, man, that was good. And like, that really like hit home for me.
Yeah, I was going to say, one small little tidbit that people don't know about you is you're a huge fan of jazz music.
I wouldn't say huge fan.
You're bigger than me and you're bigger than him. So at this table, you are a huge fan.
Okay.
Thank you. Sheesh, giving him props and still this is how, this is what I get. Okay, whatever. Yeah, throw that resolution out the window.
The thing about this movie is I feel multiple ways about this movie, and I'm still, even like a week later, I'm still trying to like piece together how I really truly feel about this movie. I feel like this movie is great. I do truly think that. But then there's other bits and pieces where I'm not quite fully sure how I feel about it. Like for some, like this, like I was super jazzed like after I watched this movie, right? And so like I'm just going online.
No pun intended.
Yeah, whatever. I'm just going online. Like seeing what people said. So then I ran into a question where someone's like, so is this supposed to be like a black version of Coco or something else? And I feel like that question kind of really started making me think about the movie differently, because like besides two scenes where like, you know, he's in a barbershop and one where he's talking with like his mom and like the people in her shop, like, this doesn't really read as, like, you know, a specifically black film.
Yeah.
It's just more of, like, a general film type thing. And I wasn't...
No offense. Whoever asked that, that was a dumb question. Like, I mean, just in the thought process alone, like, there are literally Asian people waiting in line to go to the great beyond. Why would this just be a black thing?
Well, it's not just,
and not to say that there aren't any black Asians out there, but come on. Like, I don't know. That seems a little infuriating and kind of like sidestepping the bigger picture of like, oh, well, because they got Jamie Foxx and they got Angela Bassett and Felicia Rashad. Oh, this is probably about where black people go when they die, right? It's black heaven. Like,
well, no, it's not. Like, that would be...
I'm sorry. That's what I'm hearing out of your wonderful question. Is it? It isn't somebody you know, is it?
No.
Okay, because I'm going to say we're going to have to go pay a visit to someone. That's just frustrating.
How so?
Because there's so much effort and love and time that was put into this fact of this movie that it transcends. I mean, one of the major players of this film is an English talk show host... in Graham Norton, who is a Captain Moon, whatever, something, whatever, who's in this movie, and he's a big part of it, and he is inhabiting the same great beyond or great before, where Joe is, as everyone else, like Tina Fey, middle-aged white woman. It's a joke in the film.
Right.
You know, I mean, unless you're going to talk about Richard Ayoade. A-U-I-D. We're going to have to learn how to say his last name.
Know.
I've been a fan of IT Crowd for all these years, and I don't know how to say his last name. It's frustrating. Just because we're following a black character doesn't make this a black movie.
Yeah.
It's like saying if you were watching a movie like 48 Hours with Eddie Murphy, and Nick Nolte. Is it a black movie because we follow Eddie Murphy? Or it's like Lethal Weapon. Lethal Weapon is Mel Gibson and Danny Glover. And Danny Glover's family is all throughout that movie. Does it make it a black movie? It just seems a bit obtuse to me. Like, and I'm pretty sure they meant well, but in this day and age, if you're gonna if you're gonna create something that's intentionally a black movie, then make it something that celebrates that culture and that way of life. Like something that actually builds and breathes life into recognizing the artistic the artisticness of just that culture alone. Mm-hmm. You know, the beauty of it all, rather than like, oh, well, all black people, you know, usually hail from New York and we're going to, the most interesting of them, so we're going to make it this guy from there and he's going to do this, 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 and such and such.
Well, I think it was, see, I think this is probably, might be due to the fact of the vagueness of the original trailer, because like, besides really getting a feel of like, it's about Joe, something happens, he dies. Like, you can't really place it. It's not, I think, and also I think it has to do a little bit with Coco, seeing as how that was one of the, everyone ignores Onward, but seeing as how that was kind of the previous one.
I mean,
one.
But that's that, you have a Latin child in the midst of Mexico during the 40s, and you literally are talking about somebody who is idolizing a Latino musician who has gone and passed. I mean, yeah, I could see the whole idea of like, oh, hey, this one's about Latinos and Mexicans. Like, okay, I can see that. But we're in Brooklyn, like one of the most diverse cities in all of the United States. You look at this well-to-do African-American, you know, jazz teacher who has Asian students. He's got black students. He's got whatever. You know, he's literally friended with a soul that is voiced by a middle-aged white woman who then that middle-aged white woman takes over his body and he inhabits a cat. Right. Like, how does that translate then? If this was, I don't know. It just, for me, it doesn't seem like it's focused primarily on one culture. I feel like it does celebrate his life and we get a glimpse of his life, but it's his, I think that's the key thing. That's the difference between is it a black movie or is it a movie that celebrates a black life? You know, because in this movie, I've been to New York and I've seen how cool it looks and how beautiful it is and so forth. And this movie, and you've probably heard it from me before, I really don't want to go back to New York because it is stinky as all get out. And I went in August. That was probably my biggest downfall. I went in August when it was muggy and whatever, but this movie actually made me consider like, well, maybe I can go in the fall. It looked nice. I don't know. Like just to visit. I'm not talking about living there or anything, but like I would consider it because this movie reminds me of the diversity of everything that goes on in that city. And I don't know if you know this, I go to a barber shop that looks just like that. I've taken my brother, you know, it's in downtown here. And it's like literally everybody knows each other. They'll literally move people out of seats because they see your hair. And it's like, that is really messed up. We got to do something with that.
I think,
like,
he's trying to tell you something.
I didn't say that. I didn't say it. I'm going to step away from my mic.
His finger at you too.
I'm just saying. I'm not talking about you. I'm saying in general, that's what they do. That's happened in the movie. Don't make me feel bad. But no, like, but that's the type of barbershop I go to. So that, I don't think it's typically just like a one, you know, race type of thing. I feel like that is a very digging, like, consideration of like, oh, well, if this is that, then we need this and we need that. We need this. I don't know. What do you think about it all?
Actually, I guess I kind of ended up in roughly the same spot you did, where, like, you know, it's not a specifically black movie, and that's fine. But
and I think that's kind of, well, before I go to that, what do you think, Ben? Like, what do you think about if someone watches this movie, because you've seen this movie?
Yeah.
Do you think this is a movie that's like Disney's version of, you know, are we there yet or something? Like, is this a black movie or is this something?
No.
Like, this, because like, that's what I feel like people are reaching for. Like, this is
beautiful. Well, I would hope we could do better than Are We There Yet. Like,
Ice Cube wasn't available, so we went with Jamie Foxx, okay? But I, you know what I mean. Like, this isn't Car Wash, or this isn't like what is that? Harlem Nights. Or like this isn't a movie that is focused on one culture. I don't know. What do you think, Ben?
Like you said, it's more about the person, not about the race. Because what it looks like they did do their homework. They looked up what the area looked like. They looked at what the barbershops looked like. What the theaters looked like. They wanted to get some almost exactly how it is, so the people there can be like, oh yeah, hey, yeah, that looks familiar. Oh yeah, that looks like the barbershop down the street. It's not like, oh, okay, let's get this character, let's do everything that's similar to him, and we'll throw it right there in that town. So I didn't think that, never even came to mind when I watched the movie. And like I said, it was a good movie, and you know what?
You know, and I can see where somebody could get to that, like that. And I hope you're not thinking I'm attacking you. It's for every one person that voices that, there's usually a bunch of other people who are obtuse to the whole idea of diverse filmmaking, like creating a movie that really just transcends beyond just one focus, unless this movie is to focus on something so precious that it has to focus on, or it uses a culture to, you know, really resound home the idea.
Yeah, like you said, like Coco, because they used the Hispanic culture and a Hispanic character. So that's only, like you said, that would make sense, but not to how they did it here.
Yeah.
Because that doesn't make sense at all, even to close it being racist. Because just because they have that character doesn't mean. And his character, his mom, and then everybody he was around, that's why they probably thought that, because, oh, well, everybody he talked to was black. No. It's like, you know, like you said, he had neighbors, he had students and everything. So it shows differently in the movie.
I don't know. What else? That was your only thought about that?
What part are we?
Because you were going on. Sorry, but I wanted to make sure I got his thoughts on it, too.
You said that there was a guy that commented that he thought the movie was racist.
I didn't say that. But... other parts of the movie.
Because I'm sorry, you said you had other concerns or questions about parts of the film or something. Because like certain parts didn't really resonate as hard for you, as opposed to others.
Well, this might just be my own personal preference of him being stuck in the cat because I hate cats. But like,
that's true.
Yeah,
you really don't like cats.
I really don't like cats. So,
which is interesting.
Which is so weird. Like, you can let cats in a hospital like that?
Yeah, that just like dogs.
Shouldn't be able to let dogs either.
They're trained. I'm pretty sure they're not just like, oh, look, that's a cute cat in the alleyway. Let's bring him with us. We'll take him to the hospital. I don't think that's how it works. I'm hoping.
Yeah, both of those ideas sound dangerous.
I think there were service animals is what you would call it.
That still sounds dangerous for people.
Well, I'm sure they would check to make sure you're not allergic to them.
Like, hold on. What sounds dangerous? The fact that animals can be service animals, or the fact that a cat can be a service animal?
Like both of them, to be
perfect. Really? Oh my gosh. Well, okay. And I think a lot of that is due to the fact that you are deathly allergic to both.
Yeah.
Like,
I understand. I'm just probably reading way too much.
I was just going to say, this is getting a little too close to home here for you. And we mentioned some of the great acting abilities in this film, but you have the incredible Jamie Foxx. You have Felicia Rashad. You got Angela Bassett. You got Questlove, who has a smaller role, but still substantial.
I didn't even realize he was in this movie until I was reading those credits.
What is true. Same here. What? I was like, that does not sound like Questlove at all. Okay.
Who was he? The barber?
He was the drummer.
The drummer?
Questlove.
That makes the most sense.
It does make the most sense.
That was Quest?
Yeah, that was Quest.
Dig, okay.
One of the really quick throwaways that I wish they could have explored more on was David Diggs being one of the friends in the barbershop. Us being huge fans of David ever since his role in Blindspotting, as well as his, you know, contribution to Hamilton as well. But I mean, you got people like Felicia Rashad, who plays a perfect mom in this one. Like,
she's got that role down.
I don't think there's really, I mean, I don't want to pigeonhole her in just one role, but I think when it comes to roles like this, not even a motherly role, but just a strong female role model. Mm-hmm. Like, she does that on lock. She has it on lock.
100%. I would never mess with her as a child.
No.
She is amazing.
I feel like she has that, like, that stare down and that foot tap, like, mm-hmm. just on solid. Do you know who Felicia Rashad is?
She sounds familiar, but I wouldn't.
She's Mrs. Huxtable.
Yeah.
From The Cosby Show?
Oh.
The wife?
Oh. Oh. Yeah.
I know. We don't talk about that show anymore.
Well, we're not talking about Bill Cosby, okay?
He said the words, now we're canceled.
You know, whatever. Jamie Foxx is another really good one where Jamie Foxx has a really broad range, if we're being honest. Jamie Foxx does, like, mild and quiet and simple, and then he goes from, like, zero to a million, like, with his role in Baby Driver. And then you got this, where it's kind of like just somebody finding themselves. Where if I didn't know Jamie Foxx was cast as a role of Joe Gardner, I would really be hard-pressed to say if I actually could recognize the voice. Because he just melts into it. And it just makes it his own. Angela Bassett as Dorothea. Was it Dorothea? Williams. Dorothea Williams. Oh, of course you remember that because it's your last name.
It makes it so easy.
Oh, which reminds me. One of the things that I really, really loved about this movie is there was no focus on, like, creating fake body types. Like, every person in this movie
looked really
like their body type was something that could mirror in the real world. Because there's that one scene when Joe Gardner first is introduced to Dorothea Williams. And I mean, Dorothea Williams is a little bit older, I believe. There's really no age there. But, like, she's a little bit older, but she's an older woman. She's kind of a full figured woman, if you want to call her that. And like, there's this silhouette kind of pan up with the camera in the film, and it's showing, like, you know, from the ground up her and whatever, or just accentuating parts of her, and it's like, it looks legitimate. Like, you are focusing in on the woman's music and you can hear it clear as day, and you're not, like, seeing some type of unobtainable body type, like something from The Incredibles, where, like, you know, small tiny waist, big thighs, and, you know, whatever proportions Mrs. Fantastic or Elastigirl.
Like, she was just always doing that. Is that her, supposed to be her natural body?
That's her natural body.
Oh, great.
Just like the bad guy's woman thingy, Syndrome's little henchman, the girl with the bleached white hair.
Yeah.
Like, the body proportions are very reminiscent of, like, gothic kind of cartoonish ways back in the 40s and 50s, which makes sense.
Yeah, because that, for that movie, like, even the art style of the city was that.
Yeah, yeah. But, like, you take a look at this movie, and everything from the Dorothea Williams to the mom, to the mom's friends that work in the shop, to even Joe. Like, Joe is a little bit on the pudgy side, and it's not, like, flagrantly out there, but it shows when he's trying to put on a new suit or whatever. And I really just admire the fact that they went that extra step to not focus on, like, unobtainable, similar body types that we're used to seeing, like, on other cartoons or on other ridiculous things. Like, you see this movie and you're like, hey, that could legitimately be me, 'cause I don't have a thin figure, but I love playing the saxophone, or I love playing the drums, you know, or the piano, whatever it may be. So you have to give that credit. Another really big, interesting call out are the people that are in the Great Before.
Mm-hmm.
I keep forgetting what their whole thing is called, because it's called the Great Before, but they also gave it another name. Do you remember the name?
No.
It's like the personality or the IOU.
Oh, yeah. There was a different name where they called that specific area.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't remember that.
A couple of the things that I really, really wanted to highlight, like obviously Richard Ayoade.
We'll get there one day.
One day. Is hilarious in this movie. Like his deadpan delivery of some of his lines are just, and if you're not familiar with who he is, he is the second person in the IT crowd, Moss. He's one of the guys in there. He's also the voice of one of the robots in the first season as well as the second season of The Mandalorian. He's done a few other things. He was in apparently Paddington 2 as a scientific expert on marmalade.
In Paddington 2. I need to actually.
You need to see that movie. It is good. As odd as it is, it is actually good. But one of the unsung heroes that I absolutely adored because I am a huge fan of her and her work prior to is Rachel House, who voiced Terry. Now, if you don't know who Rachel House is, she is the right-hand person to the Grandmaster in Thor Ragnarok. I swear I can talk. I'm not having a stroke. Thor Ragnarok. The one who's like wanting to touch everybody with the death stick. But before that, she's in a movie called Hunt for the Wilder People, which is a really great Taika Waititi movie done back in 2014, 2015. But she essentially plays the same character that she is in this one. Because in this one, she is hunting for the missing number that's supposed to be going to the great beyond, which is Joe, but she needs to rectify the numbers. And so she goes hunting for him, if you will. Whereas in Hunt for the Wilder People, she has to go find this kid who was a part of the state's, you know, orphan system, and the caretakers that were over him, one of them ends up dying and the other one ends up wanting to go just live in the woods. And so he decides to go follow him. And so she's on this hunt for the little kid. His name's Ricky Baker. And she's like, she calls herself like the Terminator. She's like, I'm like the Terminator. I'm gonna find him. And she uses this ridiculous phrase, totally wrong. Every time she's on camera, she says, "No child left behind." Like, she says that all the time. I introduced that movie to intern Amy because I actually have it on my Vudu. It's a really funny movie. And if you watch that, you'll have a deeper appreciation of her role here. But I really loved her role in this whole movie. I thought it was great. Everybody that was in it pretty much had really awesome, you know, interactions with each other.
Yeah, and I can't even think of anyone I didn't like in this movie.
Yeah, I was trying to think the same thing because I honestly, when the movie started up, I earnestly thought that I wasn't going to like Graham Norton's character, Moonwind, because I'm not a big fan of Graham Norton, but it works and he's in it for just the right amount that it doesn't seem overbearing. So I'm like, hey, that works. Yeah, like nobody in this movie can I actually think of I felt I could have used less of or I didn't want to use as much of, you know?
Right.
So, were there any parts of the film for you guys that really like stuck out? Like scenes or even a moment in the film that really just kind of laid it on thick where you were like, you had to do the whole choke back and you're like, I'm not crying, you're crying. That really impacted you. I don't know about crying. I'm just throwing that in there. But let me start with Ben.
Oh, man, that's hard. I enjoyed certain parts, not to the brink of teary eye, but like when they were in the zone, I'm like, you know what? I can totally understand that. When you're playing guitar or piano or any jazz instrument, you know, you feel that way, you know. And I can relate to that, you know, eating pizza for the first time when...
You get in the zone when you eat pizza.
Oh, yeah, definitely. No, okay. You know, but like when he first wakes up, the 22?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Wakes up into his body and he ends up trying that pizza for the first time and his face just changes. It's like, I can totally relate to that.
I feel like that's everyone's.
Yeah. Oh, like unless you're allergic to cheese. Well, like yeah. Your first experience God. With pizza is that.
Why even live if you're allergic to cheese?
If you never had pizza, then there's something wrong with you. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah. What about you, Spence?
Okay, so I want to preface it. I'm not holding what I'm about to say against the movie. It's just that sometimes when I'm watching a movie, my brain kind of thinks about, like, the logic of things.
Great. This is the part of the episode where everything goes downhill.
No. Because I still really... Because, like, I just, like... Okay. So, Joe's in a coma in the hospital while he's in the grate before. If he had hit the field into the, like, the after, does his body still stay alive without him? Or does, like, he die then? And if he stays alive, does that mean anyone can just fall into him and then take over his body?
I think he was alive only until he went through. Then his body kind of like flatlined unless it was on life support.
Yeah, see, that's the thing.
Well, because...
And well, I'm like, that's terrifying.
Well, I mean, maybe some people have like a much more direct approach to the great beyond. I mean, he was still somewhat alive while he was on that conveyor belt into the great thereafter, whatever you want to call it. Mm. Like, I think that was the deciding factor for him. In terms of that, I think in terms of whether or not he was still alive. but I feel like a lot of their systems are typically foolproof to create.
You're going to call them foolproof. The one where at the end of the movie, someone's like, hey, what's that over there? To adjust the count so that someone doesn't notice that someone's missing anymore.
But it was Terry. I mean.
Like, yeah, that's a valid point. But which, still.
I know I'm kind of skipping turns here, but that was the most funniest thing in the entire world, that whole scene.
Which one? The one where he got metal?
Or no, he's like, what's that over there? It looks like whatever. And he's like, what? And he just... But it's like, just because of the fact that like the juxtaposition between those two scenes, the one right before and that one, it's like you got this really heavy scene and this like, oh my gosh. And he's like, well, what's going to happen about this? Oh, we'll take care of it. Whatever. And it just transitions to like, what's that over there? And she's like, what? And it's like, come on. That was just, that's great filmmaking.
Okay, another part, again, this is going to sound super odd, but one I really liked was the part where Joe was with 22 the first time, and like, they were going through his life, and like, he just had a realization of like, I've wasted my life. And like, I don't know why, but that just felt really real, you know? Like, sometimes you feel like you're just going along and doing stuff, and then you're like, am I wasting my life doing this? Like, I don't want to be doing this my whole life. And, like, you kind of, like, focus on yourself and, like, you know, course correct your own life if you can.
Yeah.
I don't know. That one kind of hit home for me. I really liked it. I know it wasn't meant to be, like, super deep at the time, but, like, I kind of took a lot out of it.
No.
I feel like I took a like lot was, out of though. The bits that... might not have been the thing.
No. I think you're onto something because I feel like that particular scene as well. I think we all kind of had that like unique connection to that scene where it's like, dude, if there was ever a museum of my life, like number one, how short would that museum be? And number two, how like boring would that be? Yeah. Like I got all these statues of like jobs that I once had and didn't have anymore, or all the times that, you know, I've shows me failing at this or this or that. Like, In that particular scene, I think it's really awakening to myself and apparently to you of just like all the inadequacies that I see in myself. And I find that so unique in them showing that, because I don't know if you remember, but at the end of the film, it is all those same scenes that are shown back to Joe that Joe's reflected on that actually hold good memories in.
Yeah.
And I'm like, dude. Okay, all right, Disney, I see what you're doing. Okay, Pixar.
So basically, the first time he looked at it, he thought it was pointless. Yeah. But after reflecting on it deeper, it was actually a deeper meaning within of what was actually happening in the statue.
It's similar in the vein of like where Inside Out kind of traverses in the idea of recognizing, you know, you cannot have sadness without joy, and you can't have joy without sadness. Like a lot of these things come hand in hand. And I think it just happened to be like, did you notice all those scenes were shrouded in blue, you know, to kind of mirror sadness. But when you reflect on it, it was kind of had that like golden hue around it, kind of like joy. And to kind of recognize like, yeah, this is one side of it, the way you can see it. But what did that, you know, transition into? Like, whether if it's him enjoying a piece of pie or him watching his favorite shows or him using every single opportunity that was a door closed, ultimately meaning that it was leading him to where he really needed to go. Like, every closed door just narrowed the way to exactly where he needed to go. And I was like, I like that. You know, the fact is that I think the most beautiful gift that this movie gives us is showing that it's never too late to start appreciating where you are.
Right.
Whether or not it fits in your life or in whatever. Like, and I think that's a huge gift to anybody, you know, especially from a cartoon movie, you know, to gain some new perspective on, you know, your ultimate goal in life, if you will, of not just doing something, but becoming the fullest you can find. You know, any other scenes or anything else?
No, that's most of the ones that stand out to me.
That's it? Nothing else to critique? Nothing else to...
No, because I commented on how much I like that jazz music.
Yeah, I mean, let's just be honest. Oh my gosh, the music in this movie. I'm a piano player, so I actually play. And some of the movements that he was doing, the pieces that he was playing, were just like beyond me. Like, I've seen people play and I've seen jazz musicians play, but what he did kind of transcended just simple jazz, and it created different elements involved in what he was playing. Like, the first time he tries out for Dorothea Williams's quartet, like what he goes off and does when he goes into his zone, I'm like, dude, that's really something else.
Yeah.
And it's crazy how, you know, when Joe gets into the zone, if you will, his pieces are remarkably unique and very intentional. Like, there's a lot of heart behind it. So, and a lot of that you can attribute to John Batiste. John Batiste is the one who did a lot of the piano playing for Joe, where if you're not familiar with John Batiste... John Batiste has done quite a bit of things throughout his wonderful career, going through just his stuff here. He's a self-proclaimed artist, or not self-proclaimed, but he's an artist. He said himself No, John Batiste is just a phenomenal keyboard player, piano player, and it's crazy how someone could do something like that with an instrument like a piano, you know, and coming together with everything else, you have this beautiful swell of just great music that really just continue to build on what Pixar has been doing since day one, which was bringing more and more of the understanding and recognition and appreciation of the music that goes on in these films and seeing it mirrored in a way that people can connect with and relate to, you know. Any negative spots, any down points, even ones that you feel like, I didn't really not like it, but it just didn't do it for me. What about you, Ben? Anything?
No, nothing I can think of.
Spencer.
Scratching his head and all.
Hey, don't look at me. I'm just...
See, the thing about this movie is there's not really, like any real down points. Like, because most of them are nitpicks, if you had any. And, like, honestly, I don't really have any. I really enjoyed my time on this movie.
Yeah, yeah. And same here. And mind you, we didn't really go too deep into the story of this film. So, I mean, this is a movie where I can easily say leaving it spoiler free allows us just to kind of keep this ambiguous understanding of how the film kind of wraps up And you, as the listener, if you're hearing this, you really need to get a chance to check out this movie, because every part about it is such, like, it's like a gem. It's a constantly giving, you know, outpouring of gems, where every little thing is fun. Like, whether if it's seeing Pizza Rat at one point in time in the film, or
get on your meme game. It's way old now. You can tell it was written by older people.
No, maybe. to just like the fun uniqueness of watching somebody explore New York for the first time, to just all the little things, like even some great opportunities of recognizing like conflict resolution kind of stuff. Like it's just, this movie has a lot of things for it and a lot of things going for it. So as we're wrapping up this episode, let's go and go around the table, and I will start. And typically when we do this, we usually do, does the film pass or fail in terms of, does it work as a movie? Does it not work as a movie? And if it does pass, how many monocles out of 5? So for me, I am going to pass this movie. The movie actually really does speak really well about the things that I look towards in, you know, movies that kind of traverse those kinds of conversations. And seeing as this is a movie that I really didn't think would have been able to tackle this kind of conversation, it does it really well. And you have to appreciate that, for all the efforts it takes and all the strides it makes for that. Because honestly, if I was a teacher, I would really be looking into this kind of movie to deal with like the grief process with kids, to be able to kind of say, hey, so, you know, we saw this movie. How would this, you know, how do you see this as a situation? How to explain that kind of thing to a child? It really just kind of opens up that window of opportunity. Benny, what about you? Does the film pass or fail, or how many monocles? And how many?
It is a pass for me. I would definitely watch it with my kids a couple of times. I would say about 4.5.
Did I give it a monocle review?
No, you did not.
Oh. I was like, it's
good job explaining.
It's the first episode of the year, okay? Really quick, I do give it 5 monocles. I like, kind of like Spencer said, I don't find anything wrong with this movie. I think this movie is pretty flawless in its effort. Now, if they decided to make a sequel, that would be a big misstep. I don't want to see a sequel. That's like making a sequel of Inside Out. It just doesn't make sense. Which, but I'm pretty sure they probably
feel like
are.
You're forgetting about the allure of money to Disney and VHS releases. They'll still do it. They'll make you buy a VCR.
VHS release?
Yeah.
Really?
They have those still?
Probably not.
Oh my God, Spencer.
The little shops around the corner, maybe.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I'm sorry. And then, so back to what you were saying, Ben.
Yeah, I would give it 4, 4.5. Only because I do like jazz. I'm just not that much into jazz. That's not my genre, but I do love the music in it, and I do enjoy the movie.
There you go.
So it is worth watching again.
And the man, the myth, the legend, Spencer.
Yo.
What do you think of the movie? Does the film pass or fail, and how many monocles?
Movie passes for me. Really, like, again, only the downsides of nitpick. Like, and if you want to hear nitpick, could have done with more Angela Bassett, but that's a nitpick. It barely even matters, but she is amazing. I did love her.
She really was amazing.
Yeah. Especially just like attitude. Mm-hmm. Like, man, like, I could have done with more with her, and that's my nitpick for this movie. But other than that, yeah, I gotta give this movie like a 5, because you gotta kind of check it out, you know?
Yeah. And this is the type of movie you don't just want to hear about and then go read about it. Like, if you have Disney Plus, which, let's be honest, everybody has that one friend who has Disney Plus.
Find your friend. Find your friend. Shake them down for the password.
Exactly.
No. Or watch it with them. Why not just watch it with them?
No, shake them down with the password. There'll be something else coming out. You'll need it for later.
Don't ever say you're not violent, because...
There's friendly shakedowns.
Okay.
Really?
Yeah.
Let me guess. You've done it before?
Yeah.
Oh, God. Okay. Well, that about wraps up the first episode of 2021. We're excited for all the things that we have in store for this year. And not just because it's a new year, but it's a new opportunity to explore what the world has, not just cinematically, but holistically in total. We are excited because we have some new things on the horizon. And as we continue to move forward through the course of this month and next month, we'll be announcing little by little those things come, you know, maybe next week, maybe the week after.
Yeah, as soon as we figure out what we're doing.
Exactly. I mean, that's honestly the best way to put it. So, but yeah, this was a great way to kind of kick off the year and kick off the new season, season five of the Filmlosopher. So who knows? We got some great stuff in store for episodes coming up.
Hopefully there'll be great movies to accompany those great episodes.
Very true. So from all of us here at the Filmlosophers, I'm Eddie.
I'm Spence.
I'm Ben.
Class dismissed.